Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity.
Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now, right now.
Now's the time to do the right, right thing.
So, yes, we are going to stop that fussing and fighting because we have work to do, but we got to be unified to do that. I'm Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. Thank you for joining me today. We have a lot to cover. And first, I want to give some updates before we get to our panel of guests. As you remember last week on the show, I have been giving you updates on what's happening in the Tampa, Florida regarding the Uhuru 3. So in between last week and this week, we found out, as we thought would happen, that they found out that this was a sham of a case. So just to recap, this is a case of the Uhuru 3 involving Chairman O'Malley, Yeshitele, Penny Hess, and Jesse Neville as being Russian agents. And so this is all about free speech. This is Uhuru movements. And they had to go through all of this rigmarole and only to find out that it was a split verdict. One is they were acquitted on the charges of being foreign agents, but not on the charges for conspiracy to be foreign agents. So if y'all can read through the lines, you know, it's pure BS, but they had to come out of this expensive trial with something in hand. So the Uhuru 3 would not get the charge that carried the highest amount of years in prison. And so it also gives them a chance to appeal the case, which I'm sure they will. But in the meantime, they are asking us that to submit letters by the November 25th sentencing date. And we don't have that information now, but we will have it and we will let you know. And so this is a serious thing, because I keep saying, when they come for one of us in the morning, they're going to come for somebody else in the evening. So we just have to be ready for that. The other thing is, and I wish I could be bringing y'all some better news, but the state has decided to kill, by lethal injection, Khalifa Williams on September 24th, despite all the evidence that he is innocent. And so there is a flurry of activities that will be going on before then. So I want you to check out the website for Missourians to Abolish the Death Penalty. But we need to flood Governor Parson's office with calls about this case, because this is getting to be ridiculous. So those are your two assignments. Those are the two updates. And just so you know, if you have not checked out Blues of the Night by the St. Louis Black Repertory Theater, you must see it. This is a chance to not only enjoy yourself, but to support a Black institution. So I was there on Sunday, totally enjoyed myself. And you know, we've had Ron Himes, the visionary behind the Black Rep, on the show. And so we need to support that as a Black institution as well. So today we're going to be talking about some more Black folks, some more institution building. And we are going to be talking about the upcoming symposium for the Black Midwest Institute. So we have today Debbie Chess, who, as you all may remember, is a returning guest. He is the Director of Internal Relations and Development at the Dayton Metro Library. And all that means, y'all, is that she's the person that's going to make sure that library stays relevant with and to the community and make sure she's making the right connection. So it's a big fat title, and it's a big fat job, but really it just means that she's the messenger, the authentic messenger from the library, and making sure that our tax dollars are being used well there in Dayton. The other person that's with us is Rodney Veal. And Rodney is an independent choreographer, an educator. He's a producer. He's host of not just one show, but two, the Art Show and Think TV. And I kind of think that might be an oxymoron, but we can get into that later, Rodney. But the other person is Keith Harrison. And Keith is a member of the Grammy Award-winning Dad's Band. And if you've probably never seen an award-winning person be a part of an initiative like this, where there was no funds, no nothing, but it's something about the community, that's how we roll with the Black Midwest Institute. So welcome, Keith, Debbie, and Rodney.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So I want to just start with a little bit of the history of the Blacks in the Midwest, because it's fairly new, but I think it has an important role. But this year, it is the third biennial symposium, and we're going to get into that in a minute. But overall, this was an initiative to bring artists, activists, and people in the academy, bring all of us together so that we began to really, I think, look at the strengths and assets of the Midwest, particularly in a post-industrial era where, you know, we've been through so much collectively, but then as Black people, like doubly been through some trauma, but always resilient, always coming out, always tapping into our best, and also using the arts to help us understand our struggle. And so that's the thing that I always find so reaffirming is the art piece of this. And all of you all have had a role in it, because even you, Debbie, you work for the dance, contemporary dance there. So
yes,
that piece of it is always wrapped around everything that we do in BMI. And so that's always, as I said, affirming. So we've had two other symposiums. We've had a summer institute for the fellows. And I'm going to be asking you, Debbie, to talk about that a little more, because I think you were able to stay the full 5 days of that institute. But this year's symposium theme is adaptive use, reimagining Black futures in the Midwest. What does that say to you? What does that mean for you? Any one of y'all can speak.
Well, for me, a lot of people only know me for my music. A lot of people don't know that I've been very active in my community since 1992. I decided to take a hiatus off the road from performing and start to work with youth in my community. In 92, I was hired by Girl Scouts. They had got a grant from Dayton Metropolitan Housing to take inner city youth camping. Well, my wife said, well, my husband would be the perfect person. And I know why she said it, because I was raised on a farm. So outdoors was no mystery to me or any obstacle. So I ended up taking me and a staff of three. I was the main supervisor, took 350 inner city youth, K through 12, to one of the Girl Scouts campsites. And those kids were, they had a new awakening to life outside of the box. And when I say box, I mean the low-income areas from which they came from. And my whole message to them, because I never even talked about my music to them yet, my whole message to them was, you can be whatever you want to be. You don't have to live like your parents are living. You can live a life that's full and can have anything you want if you work toward it. So to make a long story short, after that, I got hired in 94 by Dayton Metropolitan Housing for the job that I did with those kids. And I was a youth supervisor over 12 housing sites. So we took all of those kids camping as well. Myself and Pastor Leon Wilkerson started the first housing choir. We were invited to the White House when Bill Clinton was in office to sing at President's Park. We won two national awards for the housing choir. From there, worked there from 94 to 96. I got hired, 94 to 2006. I got hired for Campfire as an executive director, the first Black male executive director to work with inner city youth doing after school programs. I created a pre-post and post testing. Kids' grades shot up. The crime rate went down. Because when I saw how these kids were living, I couldn't believe it, because me growing up on a farm, I had a lot of freedom. You know, to run around 7 acres, you had an orchard, garden, you had pigs, you had chickens, you raised your own product. Then some of the kids I wasn't connecting with, so then I started mentioning my music. And they couldn't believe it. I said, okay. So I brought my Grammy Award to the sites, and from that point on, I had their attention.
They couldn't believe a person of my caliber was willing
to work.
That they had somebody in their community that had those kind of stature.
Exactly. Yeah. Or had that kind of stature. You're right. So getting involved, I said, wow, this is deep. How to see how they were living, and knowingly they didn't have to live like that. So I was on a mission to say, I'm going to do everything I can to help not just the children, but the families as well, to become better citizens, to live better. To show them you don't have to live in poverty all the time, because you just got to get a mindset to work.
Right.
To work.
So, Keith, it reminds me of a quote of Bell Hooks, and she says, when we work with love, we really renew the spirit. And the renewal actually is an act of love, because it nurtures our growth, and it's not what you do, but how you do it. And so that's what I think about when I see the adaptive reuse, and even how you reimagine your own self to be an asset to the community. What about you, Rodney? What does that mean to you, reimagining Black futures in the Midwest?
Well, it's built when you're reimagining a future, you're taking in the future in the context of the past and the present. And certainly the lives of Black folks in the Midwest is rich, is varied. And serving in this role of us presenting a documentary that we produced here at Think TV on Willis Bing Davis, who at 87 years old, pillar of the community, international legacy as an artist and activist and educator, feels right. So to showcase and highlight that someone at his stature and at his age still is thinking forward, as opposed to living in the past and letting those redresses kind of dictate him. He's bold. He's visionary. He's working in multidisciplinary. He's engaging the community and connecting. And so being able to show that film, because we have been working on it 18 months, and that this would be the first public showing.
Oh, wow.
And we felt, first community showing. So we felt it was very important to be connected to BMI in that regard, because, like I said, this is a gentleman whose story, there are universal elements and themes, but there are some very unique, specific things to him as a creative and as mm-hmm. a Black man that will be fascinating to folks. And I think, and also it's nice to be able to document this history before it gets lost. Because that's another part of the future. You can't, you know, you're doomed to repeat the past if you don't study the.
And what Rodney is talking about, you all, is when he says it's going to be the first time it gets aired publicly, we are talking about it's going to be aired at the Midwest, Black Midwest Symposium on October 18th through the 19th in Dayton, Ohio. This is the Midwest. We're going to be at the Dayton Metro Library, none other hosted by Debbie Chess. And so this is going to be a chance for you to check out a legend, a living legend, whose life has been documented. And you'll get to see that for the first time at the symposium. For you, Debbie, what does it mean? You've been in Dayton, you a lifelong resident. You've had a few roles there. What do you hope that people can come to the city and take away?
One of the idea of adaptive reuse is also centered in this idea, like most many small to mid-sized post-industrial cities in the Midwest, Black cities, Detroit, Chicago, Gary, there is just environmental collateral that happened when industries pulled out. We had vibrant NCR. We had Reynolds and Reynolds. We had GM, Delco, Moraine. We had all of this bustling industry that were feeding Black folks and feeding this community. And when it came out, when it left, when those jobs went overseas, it left in its wake empty buildings and brownfields and corporate waste. And so this idea of adaptive reuse, in addition to what Keith spoke about and Rodney spoke about in the arts and this personal reuse and reimagining of who you are, how do these cities reimagine and reclaim space, especially Black people? How do we reclaim this space or look at these empty buildings, these vacant lots, and imagine themselves in them or imagine them as assets, thriving Black community, because a lot of these abandoned structures that are not just in the core of the city are on the west side, are in, abandoned houses where people had to, just as they came up north, as they call it, you know, or up south, although Midwest is a very Black Midwest culture, is a very distinct culture. But when people came up south for these jobs, just like in the past, they're now having to move on and finding another mode of economic support and leaving family homes behind, those are being bought up many times by outside developers, transforming these communities. And so this idea of adaptive reuse, taking what is already there, deciding, is it worth keeping? Change it. If we do change it, how do we change it in respect to our history, but with a very wide aperture to our past? So that's what it means for me. And I think when people come to Dayton, and if you're from the Midwest, and a Black community in the Midwest, you're going to see a lot of familiar sites. I think people don't realize Dayton is surrounded by cornfields. although it is an urban center, we've got cornfields, just a few
15 minutes away.
very affordable living.
Yeah, well, for now,
and you can get fed because there's cornfields.
Yeah.
For now, it's affordable living, and that's part of the conversation that's going to happen. I think that there is so much that we have in common as Black people living in these disinvested communities that is reflected in that title, adaptive reuse, reimagining Black futures.
And I don't want to be myopic in the way that I look at it, but it certainly seems to me Midwest has taken a hit maybe that some of the other regions have not. And that's because, as you said, Debbie, you know, the bustling of all the industry, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Because what, as you were describing it, you could have just easily been describing Detroit, St. Louis. I mean, we were the site of the three car, you know, manufacturers here. You know, all of these people just left, and big buildings just like. And so you do have to wonder, like, well, what are we supposed to do with this big monster of a building, which was an assembly line, hit in the heart of the Black community? So it does call for some creativity, some visionary, frameworks to look at how do we build, how do we do this? And so when I say myopic, I mean, like, it just seems like we suffered more than maybe some of the other ones. Maybe we did, maybe it's just because I'm living it that we have. I know we've been to Minneapolis with the BMI conferences. We've been to Detroit. Now we're going to Dayton. So people get a chance to see the common threads that bind us and why this work is so important for us, you know, not just BMI, but as individuals. And each one of you all got your own sort of stake in the ground, you know, making your roots, you know, grow and that kind of thing. I just know that it just seems incredibly hard for us in the Midwest, because we often are looked at as flyover territory, or, you know, y'all kind of country, but you don't really know what's going on. And I'm like, really? You know? So there was a young organizer out of Madison who coined the phrase fresh coast. And that's what I've been using. Yeah, we're not necessarily a coast, but, you know, we're going to be fresh, and we're going to come, you know, we're going to bring truth to power. We're going to bring all that we are to the space that we are. And we're just going to compete with these East Coast, West Coast people, you know, think they're all that in the bag chips. So we got a good thing going on, y'all. But really, I want people to remember that all of the information about the Black Midwest Institute is going to be on the website. And so we're getting ready to dive a little bit into the actual format. First and foremost, when we go to these cities, we like to take a look, a deeper dive into the neighborhoods, what's going on. So there's a bus tour that's going to go through Dayton, showing us the highlights of Black life. And already, y'all, the bus is full.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Debbie, I don't know if we could get a second bus, but, you know, I might be, you know, on the floorboard, like, trying to listen in as we're going down the street. I didn't check that box. And so I'm not in there yet. But I always found that fascinating, because, you know, when you go into a city, you know, that all the touristy stuff is what they're gonna push you towards. But we like to really take people to the hood, to the people who are doing the work, who are not just, you know, surviving but thriving, who are really trying to make a difference where they are. So if y'all trying to get to the bus tour, that's gone, but it's gonna be so much more that you'll be able to partake in. So yeah, the schedule is on the website, y'all. So it is full, it is full, it is full. So I think the thing that people should know, that how important the BMI is, Dave Sims is going to open this up.
Yes,
that's the mayor of Dayton. So this is important, y'all. So he feels like he can take his schedule, move it around, and be there to welcome us. So I think that's just, I don't know if that was your doing, Debbie, who did that, but yeah, thank you for that. Because collectively, our leaders and how they interact with community, really.
Yeah.
With the mayor, Jeff Mims, he grew up in Jefferson Township, mm-hmm. and they lived right across the street from us. We had the 7-acre farm, and then they lived in Carver Village, which was a community, you know. So to watch him grow to become mayor of the city of Dayton was quite an honor. And if any time I round him, he always say, yeah, I remember this guy when he was in diapers.
Also, the beauty keeps being in the Midwest. It's still that sort of country feel, but it's a metropolitan area. But you feel very connected. Families grew up with one another. Yes. They know where they went to school together, went to church together. Yeah.
So we'll also play drums.
Oh, he's a drummer.
Him and my brother had, they did a drum duet where they would face each other and play beats and toss their sticks back and forth, and they won many, many talent shows.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Maybe we could pull up something, Debbie, and show that while he's introducing it.
That was back in the 60s.
Back in the day. And so, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
You know, what's interesting, Jamal, you mentioned the bus tour will open this, and what's going to close it is a something called Black Midwest Mixtape. Mr. Harrison's going to be featured, and really the art contributions of the Midwest to the international music scene. And
absolutely,
one of the things that really is unique and so attractive about the symposium is that it is an arts-based conversation. Yeah. And it is, you know, we are highlighting the visual arts, the as spoken word, music. So people will get a very well-rounded experience of what it is to be Black in the Midwest, capped by the Minneapolis sound, mm-hmm. Dayton, Chicago house, Detroit Motown, and really that music that brings us, it lights mm-hmm. people's face. And I think people don't realize that came out of Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, yeah.
That
right, absolutely.
People, still young people who do not know funk came out of Dayton, Ohio.
Because what I heard, Keith was going to be part of it, and I heard Dad's Band, which I hadn't heard in a while. First thing that hit my mind is doing the bump at different dances to that music. And so, yeah. But Debbie, before we delve into that, because you actually went all the way to the end, I wanted to talk about those 15 fellows who are going to be presenting there, because you had the honor and the privilege to be there for that week-long piece. I was a facilitator, so I was just there a couple of days. But these are some phenomenal artists in their own right. So talk about some of the ones that stand out for you. And I know all of them won't be presenters, but their work will all be there. And again, listeners, you can take a look at them on the website. There's beautiful pictures of them, and you click on the picture, you can see what they got about. And I know when I was there, one of the things that struck me is that they had such interesting backgrounds that pushed them to this work. And so for me, that's always fascinating. But talk about that week of bringing together BMI's mission of arts, academics, and activism together with these 15 artists.
I want to start with saying Rodney Beale was very key in pulling that together as well. We had a small committee here mm-hmm. of folks that organized this event. And Candace, want to give a shout out to Candace Bobo. And yes, Candy Bobo. And Angela Burden. And Rodney and myself as the core organizers, but Rodney really helped us vet those artists with his background with Ohio Arts and working in the arts. He really had a wonderful framework of how to, you know, rank and how to assess the, you know, what they were bringing to the table. And we had over how many, 70? We had a
70, I want to say 77 or 78. Applicants. I mean, so which
15.
Yeah.
And so, and that what that told us is that there is a wealth of creativity and talent in the Midwest.
Yes.
When you see numbers that large, that they're wanting to showcase and highlight their experiences, their creativity, their talents, I love that, like, you know, this notion of, you talked about it earlier about the East Coast, West Coast, we always get, you know, we're the flyover. And a speech I gave a few months ago, I told them, I said, where do you think these talented artists come from on the East Coast and West Coast? They come from the Midwest. Where do you think they're coming from? So you need to... There needs to be this acknowledgement that the Midwest itself is the fertile ground, fertile ground for creativity. And, you know, being able to create a documentary about one of its leading lights, it's a part of our here at PBS. And it's a new role for me, stepping in as a community arts liaison. And as well as a producer. I think I'm in week number 8. So this is really new. But I've been working with them, with the station freelance for this documentary, is that, you know, we are just, it's easy to kind of not see in totality. I sit in a unique place to see how rich Southwest Ohio is. It's kind of a cradle of creativity. I mean, if you like the bands, like we all, you know, you JT, I'm a JT, you know, I parents live on Route 4. So you know, when see the folks in JT know, like we live on Route 4. And so the bands were always there. The music was always there. There was no one ever questioned that you were in a band. No one ever questioned if you were a dancer or a visual artist, because they believed in it. They believed it was just a matter of this is Black Midwestern life. And so being certainly the prime example of that, he could have been anywhere. Bing Davis could have been anywhere, but he chose the Midwest. He chose to stay.
Yeah. And we have, so we put the application out, 70 responded. We boiled it down to those 15. And we really made a mindful effort to make sure 5 of them were from Dayton, that Dayton was very centered in that. So we have choreographers, visual artist Countess Winfrey will be performing. Oh my gosh, Jamal Durr, one of our painters.
Visual artists, painters, fantastic artists, fabulous artists.
His work will be on display. And then we also have filmmakers from across the Midwest, Indianapolis. A young woman is going to be premiering her film. Dry Bones will be the world premiere of her film, in addition to the Bing Davis documentary. And so that ability to highlight the arts was one of the things that made this so attractive to the library. And so attractive to the other people that support it, that, you know, our foundations and individual contributors, Downtown Dayton Partnership, shout out to them. City of Dayton, shout out to them. Kettering Foundation, big shout out to Culture Works. And it was that arts piece that really spoke to them, the art, this melding of arts and humanities that really got wind in the sails of organizing this.
And I want my listeners to know that it wasn't just a bunch of people say, here, I do spoken word, here's my rap tape. No. These folks had to present. And then after that institute, they had to work on refining and
their project.
For the upcoming symposium. So it wasn't like, I'm going to do my thing. Oh, no.
Yeah. So the process was they were chosen and then invited to Chicago for those 5 days. And they went through an intense workshops of you spoke. And there were so many other artists, Jeff and Tamala Ray, who are part of it. Some folks that are outside of BMI, and really provided these artists with a foundation, a context for which to present work that would be shown at the symposium. So they went through that and it was just beautiful. There were tears, there were, you know, it was a really gorgeous thing. And then they were told, okay, go back to your community, go back to your space and create work that's going to be displayed at the symposium. You know, they were provided a stipend and some assistance that way. But that was the process is to really kind of dig deep, and some of them are academicians as well as artists. Some of them are just, you know, are not just artists, but art is their primary creative output. So you're going to see a really wide depth of artwork.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the upcoming Black Symposium that will be held in Dayton, Ohio, October 18th and 19th, and we are a month away, so you have time to get your logistics in for the folks in St. Louis. It's a 5-hour drive, so and I'm going to tell you, you be engrossed and embedded in 2 days of activities. I mean, when you leave there, I know I'm speaking for myself, I am totally joyfully exhausted. Because it's not a kind of conference that you want to go meander somewhere. No, you scared you're going to miss something. So you stay the whole time and it's like boom, 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 boom the whole time.
Absolutely.
Like something is going on. So what else can people expect you all at the symposium by the Midwest Black Midwest Institute? What
we're going to see you.
Oh, see, I thought you were going to tell people that it's free.
No, it is free. It is free and open to the public.
Absolutely.
But register. You have to register. But it is free and open to the public. But when I say we're going to feed you, well, you know, that's only one meal. So you'll get to experience, you know, Dayton cuisine and in some other ways. There's restaurants and things downtown. You're also going to experience, there is an art gallery where we're going to be showing Rodney's piece just right down the street, the Edward A. Dixon Gallery, Black-owned gallery. There will be an after party. You're just going to, I think what will surprise people the most, what I hope will be surprising the most to them is the love in Dayton and the curiosity that we have and just are determined to make where we are a better place and to thrive in it. So you're going to see a lot of love in Dayton.
Yeah. And I'm actually starting to look, when I look at the schedule, I know that there's going to be young adults involved in sharing and have prepared, you know, presentations. But to Keith's work, I'm wondering, do we have something that would attract teens? And that's what I'm thinking, because there are groups that are inquisitive, but often get left out or locked out. But they are definitely full of creativity. And I'm wondering if after this, and I know this is the point of going city to city, is because you're not just dropping something and leave. You're hoping that some roots would spread, and particularly since you have five artists from there, that's going to mean that there's going to be some ongoing activities and around Dayton that's going to continue to lift up Black folks, not just in Dayton but in the Midwest. So have we thought about how outreach for younger people than what we have already scheduled?
Well, as part of the symposium, there was a whole committee that put together the programming, and everything in it is age appropriate. You know, there's something that everyone is welcome. There, I don't think that there is a thing that is specifically for teens in those 2 days of programming, but they certainly are not excluded. We have done outreach to schools and to, you know, to make sure that people feel welcome and will come. And like you said, I really do hope that this plants a seed that other people can take up and find some programming that meets the needs of the communities that they work in, especially.
So if you all missed that, this is a family oriented activity. So people can come and bring their families and it'll be something in there for everyone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that our council, who helps to do the planning, and in full disclosure, I'm a part of the council. We actually have people on the council that reflect the three pillars. So we got folks from the academy. We have folks from that do organizing. We have folks that do the arts. And so when I think about, for example, the Ray couple, you know, Tama, and, you know, you got people there who've been doing film documents. And so to have them be able to interact with, you know, Rodney and some of the other folks, the person that's doing the Bones piece, you know, I always feel like I'm connected with people who are doing what I'm doing, because I want to hear what they're doing and I want them to hear what I'm doing, see what I can do differently, better. So it really is going to be a networking space and hopefully an affirming space and an inspirational space that people go away with having be full of ideas, full of, you know, enthusiasm about wanting to do something in Dayton or wherever they're from.
It's We're opening the space with our own poet extraordinaire, Sierra Leone, who has created a lot of beautiful space in the midst of tragedies that have taken place in Dayton. And just, again, like many other Black Midwest have not, we have seen a fair share of this community, weather-related tornadoes that have decimated cities, mass shootings in the Oregon district not too long ago, a few years ago, and just these other spaces that we need to cleanse and clear and refertilize and fertilize. Sierra Leone is really wonderful in creating that type of space, and that's what we hope to see grow us, is just this cleansing and clearing and affirming.
So I know there's another documentary, The Refrain, from the person from Milwaukee. Is that going to be a film that's also going to be shown?
I'm not 100% sure, Jamala, to be honest.
So Damar Walker may be just a panelist, but not that film won't be shown. So we know that there's going to be two world premieres. That's enough. But yeah, mm-hmm. I was just thinking about The Refrain and if that was also going to be shown.
It may be. I don't know.
Okay. Well, what else should we know about the Midwest, about Dayton? Because as I said, when you talk about Dayton, it sounds like St. Louis. I mean, when you talk about, it sounds like Detroit. It sounds like Kansas City. It sounds like Chicago. It sounds like Indianapolis. I mean, there is this thing about the Midwest. And sometimes when I go east, they think I'm from the South. Well, you know, I got a little bit of a draw because my parents were from the South. So it's almost like, again, y'all country cousins, y'all don't quite know what we know. But I just think about all of, like you said, the people who are making waves in the arts are really... They're from here. So you think about Miles Davis, you think about Josephine Baker, you think about, you know, we shared all people with the world, okay? But so sometimes people forget the origins, but we don't.
Not just the arts. Yes, we're right. Home of Paul Laurence Dunbar, but we're home of massive industrious scientific people who innovated science. Who invented things, African-American people who invented things. You're going to learn about that on the tour. Dayton at one point was the Silicon Valley of the Midwest because of the number of patents and inventions that came out of Dayton in the 40s and the 50s, 40s, all the way up. Cheez-Its were from Dayton, Ohio. But that's the thing. It's so much creativity. And so much industry. And when I say that, I don't mean that in the corporate sense of the word, but the internal drive to thrive was in Dayton and continues to be in Dayton. And I think you asked earlier, what do we want to see? And I'd love to hear what Keith and Rodney have to say, what people want to take away from Dayton or to see happen in Dayton. But what I want people to understand and know about Dayton is that a strong community. We are a smart community and we work hard. Mm-hmm. And we want to see equity in the spaces that we sit in. And this is one of the tools in the toolbox of reimagining Dayton that watch Dayton grow.
and so for you, Rodney and Keith, to answer the same question in the last few minutes, but Keith, I especially want to ask, since you come from a farm and because cornfields are wrapping around Dayton, how is Dayton utilizing gardening, urban gardening, and helping people to understand the land better? Do you see that happening? I mean, obviously the mayor is a country boy. But how is that translating for folks? How we understand our connection with the land, with nature, food?
Yeah.
I think what people are going to find out, you know, Dayton was a blue collar city, a major blue collar city. Mm-hmm. One, we had all kind of factories. We had Frigidaire. We had Dayton Tire. These particular factories, families, you know, when one retired, they looked at the son or daughter to step in those spaces. Outside of the city is where you had your culture of agriculture, of your foods and products and produces and everything. You had Mike Sells Potato Chips is very famous here. We have Mark Rephrase. His father invented the pull-off top of the pop cans, you know.
Okay.
And that's still relevant, you know. And today you have my cousin had a coal company here that was very successful. He had contracts with military bases and you know, because they used a lot of coal and the types of things they did. So but as far as the food products, you know, you have to go way out, you know, out in this, further out in the suburbs to check out the different farms. There was a lot of farms in the outskirts of Dayton, Ohio. I'm surprised my father even got into farming, you know, from working in the city. But it's you know, people had orchards. They would take their bushels of apples up to Wren's Supermarket, which was a popular Black-owned store that a lot of the Black communities would go to buy their food. You just had a lot of gardening. A lot of people had chickens. They had cows. They would, you know, butcher the cows and have the meat. They had pigs. They butchered the pigs and have the meat to provide to the different supermarkets that were around the city. Then they were mom and pop kind of stores that provided that kind of stuff. So those young people who grew up in those kind of communities were able to have part in that, growing up in that environment. And hopefully it never left them. It never left me. You know, I like natural products more than I like, you know, the other type products. But now, you know, with all the pesticides, they use spraying stuff, it's hard to tell what's good and what's not good. I just think, you know, because of the richness of this area, it brought a lot of wealth to Dayton at one time. Now we've moved to a white collar type city where it's technology. And you'll find that there's a lot of technology businesses that are in the area. And a lot of the students who are graduating are moving away from Dayton for some reason. And the people and business people of Dayton are trying to keep them to stay here in Dayton. But like you mentioned earlier, what is it to offer the young people? Okay. Well, being it's a technical or technology type of city now, these are things they have to pick up in school or college to learn about technology. Even in the music world, you know, we have to keep up because music has gone from live musicians to technology, and you have to keep up with the different softwares that you use, those types of things, you know. So it's everywhere, technology. It seems to be where the world is moving.
Right.
And we as not only minorities, but all people have to keep up with that if we're going to survive.
And unless it's going to be used against us.
Yeah, there's a lot of AI stuff going around, you know. myself, I have an AI dog. I love my robot dog. I call him K9. Came all the way from China. So I'm in, you know, they call me Mr. Gadget. So I'm into stuff like that. Mm. But you're right, it could be used against us.
Absolutely.
And it can be used for us.
Right. If we understand it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It depends on whose hands it falls into.
Absolutely. So, Rodney, you want to take us out? Tell us about the Dayton you know. And also, if you could give us a peekaboo about something that people normally don't know about Dayton and they might want to ask people about when they get there, what would that be?
Oh, my goodness. that's a tall order. Because I'm a native Daytonian. And, you know, Jefferson Township seems to be a recurring theme. So... You know, it was the best place to be raised as a kid.
Yeah, it was.
But what people may be shocked and surprised by is the fact, like when I talked about where do you think these talented people come from, like that Dayton, I come at the arts as a multidisciplinary artist through dance. I mean, dance is a really big part of my practice. The fact that there is one of the oldest contemporary modern dance companies that was founded by a Black woman in Dayton, Ohio.
Wow.
It's internationally renowned. Dayton Contemporary Dance Company is in Dayton, Ohio. That the fact that there is a list of artists who are working in Hollywood, who are working in New York and Broadway, students who graduate from Wright State and Central State and Ohio State and UD and all, they're from this region who are just killing it in the performing arts. And I just think that that's something that would shock them. Like you look at the city and like, how could you would never, and that's the thing. It may look a certain way.
Unassuming.
But behind the thing that may turn off most people is a rich opportunity,
right?
To create and to share and to strengthen your voice. Right. So having someone like the, you know, Geraldine Blunden was a force of nature, and so the fact that she from the grave, from beyond, from heaven, from up mm-hmm. above, mm-hmm. guiding us as our elders do, you know, has birthed. So, a Countess Winfrey, the opportunities for a Countess Winfrey to thrive in our community. So I just feel like, you know, don't ever, ever, ever think that there's not fabulousness in the Midwest, and particularly in Dayton. It'll shock people. How much?
We're just an embarrassment of riches. Do not, I repeat, do not count out Fresh Coast. Because we arrived, we are doing our due, and we're going to show y'all that when we come to Dayton, Ohio, October 18th and 19th, and you got to be there, y'all. It's not going to be virtual, so if you're not there, you're going to miss all this good stuff.
Don't have a FOMO moment.
Yeah, you might be able to see some of these world premiere documentaries later, but you won't have like the interaction with all these positive, powerful people.
Absolutely.
So, Rodney, yeah. Keith, Debbie, thank you for joining us. And if we didn't create some buzz around this symposium,
we got some dead
people out there.
Absolutely.
So, for you all who may want to come back and listen to this and get some more information, always go to JamalaRogers.com, get this as well as shows. And it's all there. It's all there. And we're not going to make announcements, but go to the website for upcoming things that are going on in the St. Louis area that you need to check out. But this is Jamala Rogers, your host, and I will see you on the ballot.
Thank you.
Right now. Right now. Right now.